At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Saffron Honey Chai. Thanks so much for stopping by. And today, I know what you've all been waiting for. I'm here to talk about my September curriculum. But it's October, you say. I know. I had to actually learn the stuff. I don't like to just post what I'm going to do because sometimes I say, oh, yeah, I'll do it. And then you guys are so excited. I'm like, oh, well, I guess I don't actually have to do it. So I made it. I did it. I finished. And now here I am ready to discuss it with you. So my September curriculum topic was Nushu. I'm definitely saying it wrong. Okay. Nushu is the secret female-only language that was created in Zhangyang in the Hunan province in China. And it was created specifically because the women there were not, I'm not sure if they weren't allowed to. I feel like they weren't allowed to learn how to read normal Chinese. So they had to come up with this secondary language to communicate with each other and to, you know, write out their normal daily life. So the same way we all write it with our journals, or some of us do, they were writing on fans and in notebooks. They had like books that they gave each other, things like that, like passing notes, but more elegant and classy. And what made me interested in this topic was a little book called Snowflower and the Secret Fan. Now, I read that book, I want to say, maybe 20 years ago. I read that book 20 years ago. Maybe that's pushing it. But yeah, 20-ish years ago, I read it thereabout. And it was so interesting to me because I never heard of Nushu. And I was just really into like Chinese culture at the time. So I was like, well, let's check it out. Let's see. And it was such a gripping and moving book. So I said, well, let's read it again so I can revisit that same feeling. And it was somewhat shrouded in mystery, Nushu. So let's really get into it. And I'm going to explain to you how I set out this curriculum. First, I needed a fictional component. So I picked Nushu as the actual topic. I picked Snowfall and the Secret Fan as the fictional component. I picked two pieces of media to go on. So I watched a documentary film called Hidden Letters. And I watched, well, rather listened to a podcast episode on Nushu by Laszlo Montgomery over at the China History Podcast. And just an aside, I love Laszlo Montgomery. He is such a good and fun podcaster. All his episodes are extremely inviting and engaging. He can talk to you all day long about the Warring States period and this and that. And it's like, wow, Laszlo, how profound, how unique, how interesting. So if you are interested in Chinese history or just kind of want to hear what I'm talking about, go check him out and, you know, give it a listen. My favorite is the Chinese Sayings podcast. That's what got me into him. And there you go. Didn't expect to plug him in the middle, but I really enjoyed it. So I listened to that episode. And he, of course, hyped Snowflower and the Secret Fan, of course, as well. Because, I mean, most people were not really discussing Nushu. A lot of the creators of it, or rather the inheritors of it, before it was announced, were ready to just kind of let it go. They were like, well, I mean, if it dies with me, it's fine. We don't need it anymore because the situation that precipitated the need for Nushu initially was the fact that women didn't have any way to write or share their stories or histories. So since they didn't have to write or didn't have a method of writing, they had to come up with this. And it's very easy to misunderstand and think, oh, so all women in China were writing in Nushu? No, it was just the women in this one specific area. So in this one specific area, in this one province of China, they were writing in Nushu. Everywhere else, I don't know what they were doing, but it wasn't that. And so it was really a rare and unique circumstance that it came about, because it was about to disappear completely until after that book was published. And then more people got interested in it, and more people went to Hunan province to try to learn more about it, to see, okay, well, what's going on? What can we see is happening here? And so in the documentary Hidden Letters, we got to see some of the modern day inheritors. And the inheritor is basically just someone who has chosen or been gifted with the opportunity to learn Nushu. Now, the thing about Nushu, in one of the papers I was reading, it was described as more of a transliteration of a oral tradition, because a very key thing about Nushu is the songs. The songs are very important, and I don't dare try to imitate them because they are not the same as Chinese in general. And I already struggle with Chinese, but they are this specific sub-dialect of another dialect. So if you are thinking, oh, I'm going to go learn Nushu, and you don't even speak Chinese, you're going to have a hard time, because even people who already speak Chinese have a hard time learning Nushu because they don't speak the specific dialect of Jiangyang in the Hunan province. So even people in greater Hunan province, they go to Jiangyang, and they're like, what is this? So just keep that in mind. It's very niche and it's very specific. And I do think that's what gives it its value, because it's niche, it's specific, and it gives us an opportunity to sort of look back into the past. And when you bring that into the arena of thinking about this, you have to remember there are a few different things working around why we almost lost the knowledge of this, like, hidden language. Firstly, it was meant to be secret. Men were not able to read it by design, and it's written in this long way, this elongated way, so it looks somewhat easy to miss. And it's not really based on the written Chinese characters. It is based on, like, somewhat making it look sort of like that, but more so making it something that's easy to imitate and teach. So lines, slashes, dots, because it was either etched into things or painted into things when you had access to ink. So that is pretty key. And then, as a part of Chinese culture, there is this concept of, like, when someone dies, you burn the letters, you burn effects related to them so that those things can follow them into the next life. So let's say your cousin dies, you guys were really close, you exchanged a lot of letters in your life, you will then find her letters, burn all the letters she wrote, burn all the letters anyone ever wrote her so they can follow her into the next life. And then anything she ever wrote, anything else she ever wrote, they have this thing called the third day book. And she would write into that to talk about her married life, and everyone else would write in it. So her mom, sisters, cousins, friends, sworn sisters, anyone could write in this book to sort of give her some love and encouragement for her upcoming nuptials. And then she wouldn't get it until the third day of her marriage. So now she's been in this new place with her man, because when you get married in China before the modern era, you start to move into his house. So you get married, you move in slowly, and you're spending those 3 days with your man. So it's just you and the family, the new family, and you're living there with them and experiencing whatever you're experiencing and doing whatever you're doing. But it's enough time where you start to miss your home life, because you are still going back and forth in those early marriage days. But you're still going to be missing them because your place in the family is different than it was before. So they would get this book and they would continue to write in it throughout the duration of their lives. And then when they died, it was burned, and so was everything. So a lot of things were burned in this situation. And then also in the Chinese Revolution, a lot of things were labeled as old or bad in a way that is harmful to society. So if you had, like, a Ming Dynasty vase in your house, you had to find a way to get rid of that sharp, because if they came in and they saw you had it, then it's like, whoa, hold up. Are you glorifying the old feudal era? You're sick. You sicken me. You disgust me. And then they would go in there and smash it up or take it out or do whatever they wanted to do with it. So a lot of that writing was also lost in that same way, because they were saying, like, wait a minute, this is four olds. Why is this in your place? And this was coming up a lot. So it's only due to the work of a few different types of people. So there is the historian who was like, I'm going to save it and find a way to save it. So a lot of people, they folded in old stuff into quilts and things like that and sewed it in between the fluff. Or they would find ways of hiding things in plain sight, like trick floor paneling, things like that. And then, of course, there were the, you know, Chinese who went to other places in the world. So Chinese Americans, Canadians, UK, they would go other places in the world and they would just have all this stuff. And so we only got to keep some of these historical records because of that. So it's pretty interesting. And as I was reading into it more and learning more about it, I was seeing that it's very difficult for a lot of people to really understand why this particular language was valuable, especially in the cases of preservation. Because in the movie, Hidden Letters, there were some scenes where they were talking about, oh, how can we commercialize it? How can we, you know, make money off of it? But it becomes somewhat difficult because the sake of Nushu wasn't for the purposes of making money. Even as I'm speaking about it right now, I'm talking about it on a podcasting platform. Ideally, I might make a few ad dollars off of this. I might get a couple coins swinging around in my pocket. But the point of Nushu was never to make money. Just like the point of writing isn't specifically to make money. It's the way you use it. And the issue that kept arising was the women were talking about, yes, cultural preservation, you know, historical importance, blah, blah, blah. And the men were like, yeah, but how can we make money off of this? Can we sell it for potatoes? Like, can we, you know, connect it to some cool branding? However, that's not what even makes people interested, especially when you speak to or see accounts from the inheritors. The inheritors are not interested in that sort of thing. They're interested in continuing the cultural thread that was started by their Nushu foremothers from maybe thousands of years ago. We actually don't know how old it is because of all the burning I was talking to you about. So when we are looking into this, we have to look at a few things. Why would they need this? They need this to express their true thoughts. Because if you are a wife, a mother, a sister, a daughter in feudal China, under Confucianism, no one is really concerned about what you have to say. And in fact, not only is what you have to say not important, but it's not important to the point that they had this concept called the three obediences. So you're obedient to your father in your childhood, to your husband and your adulthood, and to your sons as, you know, a widow, like once your husband is dead. And it's sort of a foregone conclusion that he's gonna die before you. Like, it's like, oh yeah, in your widowhood, like for sure you're gonna be a widow. Okay. And like the woman's voice is so separate from society because the women's matters were all indoors. And even in the book, a lot of the story took place indoors. They were in different rooms, in different houses, just indoors doing what they were supposed to be doing in the women's chamber, which was typically weaving and embroidering and making clothes and stuff. So you need to have this thing that allows you to express your worries, your woes, your grief, your excitement, things that are in your mind, in your heart, so that you can do what was required of you in this Confucian time and say, I am willing and ready to sacrifice for my family, pain, suffering, hardship, in order to give everyone what they need. And when I say pain, suffering, hardship, honey, I mean pain, suffering, hardship, because I'm not sure like how lined up this is, but during a long part of time where there's Nushu in this area, there's also foot binding. And I don't know if you guys know anything about foot binding, but to basically sum it up for you, foot binding is where your foot is just systematically broken for years to fit into a teeny tiny little space, like 3 to 4 centimeters. Your foot's supposed to be that small to go into an itty bitty little shoe so you can just be like, do, 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 do. And have like your swaying lotus gait.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
So it's like you just look so delicate and frail and just, I don't know, I guess it was making the men's heart pitter-patter. And a lot of people, they're like, oh, how could the men force them to do that? However, when looking into it, it's not entirely clear that it's the men forcing them to do this. It looked very much like it was something that a lot of women took up upon themselves as a form of, like, feminization to further lean into femininity. So the same way people in, like, old time Europe were putting on lead makeup to make themselves look so heartbreakingly pale and delicate and frail as if they had the consumption. These women were breaking their daughter's feet and their little nieces and cousins' feet to make sure that they could have good marriage prospects. And so in this era where you are suffering insane hardship to the point where 1 in 4 people might die from this undertaking, it becomes very necessary for you to have a way to express this pain besides just whispering to your girl, my God, this hurts, in between embroidery. There has to be another way for you to let that out and for you to let out what other pain and grief is in your life. Because there were a lot of cultural things that were overreaching and then local things. Like, so right now we have hardship. We have reproductive justice issues. We have, you know, pay gap, otherwise gender inequality. But we also have local things that happen in our home. Oh, maybe my mom and dad are going to split up. Well, I mean, not back then, that was never going to happen. But right now, you know, maybe my parents are going to split up. Maybe I'm failing a class. I'm extremely stressed out. So you just need a way to, like, get that out so it's out of your head. You're not thinking about it all day. Or if you do still think about it all day, it's nowhere near as all-encompassing as it would be if you didn't put it out there somewhere. So they just need this, and they needed it as a way to be in community with each other. So the women that did know it, because not all women, even in Chenyang, knew it. So you needed it in order to have community with these other women who knew it and understood the cultural mores of knowing Nushu. So rule number one, don't show it to the men. They wouldn't understand anyway. Don't teach a man how to read it. Why would you do that? What's wrong with you, girl? Be careful of what you write. So a lot of women, they would only write like very specific things. They wouldn't write like, my husband has a small penis and like, he's very dumb. I can't stand this guy. They were never writing that kind of stuff in there. Although maybe they might've, but it was burned. But they were writing like accounts of their daily life that they couldn't freely speak out, especially because when you move in finally fully to your house with your new man, his mom's in charge of the place. Because it's the house. So the mom's in charge of the house. And they're like, of course, the dad is in charge of her. But like, she's really in charge. Let's be real. And so you're spending all day with her. So you have to be very careful. Because if she can read Nushu and she's reading in your book, they're saying her son is dull-witted and smells like a pig. There's going to be issues in your house. You must be very careful with what you write. Just like now, you have to be careful with what you write in general. Because someone goes in, sees your journal. What on earth are you writing in there? Basically the same thing. Except, depending on who heard what, you could also lose face in society. And losing face in society is pretty bad, I won't lie. Face is a specifically like Asian concept where it's like, I mean, a lot of people, they relate it to honor, but it's not exactly honor, but like it's in a similar vein. It's like if you find out that the local politician is not only a liar, but hits up middle schools for girlfriends. And his whole campaign was based on, you know, female equality. And it's like, oh, I can't really trust you anymore. That's the only way I can put it to describe the intensity of it if you lose face. Because not only would you be like disgusted with that person for portraying themselves incorrectly, but you would also see all of their previous work as losing legitimacy. And I feel like that might be, you know, to the extent. So you had to be extremely, extremely careful. But To this day, we still have some good examples, and they even have a nice museum about it, or so I've seen in the pictures online, that I would love to go visit because I really enjoy seeing history, specifically women's histories, preserved. And in the folklore sense, because I mentioned earlier, they are suggesting that Nushu is really just a way of writing down what was an oral tradition. So they have their stories. Now, of course, there's Chinese folklore, but alongside they would have like these women's stories that they would tell to make it seem more more relatable. So to a young girl, they're going to tell her, make sure you have good character, make sure you live well. So no matter what the circumstances it are, you can always have mercy visited upon you. Make sure you have good sons and you're filial to your, you know, birth family and to your family that you go to. It was just a lot of stress and burden for these young ladies. And, you know, right now, there's still stress and burden for everyone everywhere, of course. But I think that the issues that precipitated the need for Nushu, they don't exist, but similar relationship issues do still arise. Because in the documentary, two of the inheritors were divorced. And one of them, you watched, you saw the reasons basically why she got divorced, because her man was telling her that she had to quit her job, well, not her job, quit her studies, so she could focus on a job and then get a part-time job too, so she could focus on having kids. So she had to work two jobs and then have kids. Because even though, you know, the Cultural Revolution happened and things really changed a lot in China, like certain mindsets will still be pervasive. If for thousands of years, you know, the Confucian setting of we must be willing, ready and willing to sacrifice ourselves, and the women especially must be willing to sacrifice for the family, to take care of the family, to provide for the family, we will still have this sort of thing in the modern world. It'll just have a different way of interpreting itself. So instead of, oh, you must stay cloistered in this room and weave and knit all day, or, you know, if you don't have bound feet, you must be out there helping us to farm and cook and clean and do all this other stuff. Like, you must instead go out and work and then still have a baby for me. Also give up your passion, by the way. So it was really understood when it was like, yeah, she's divorced. I cheered a little bit. Thank God you're divorced. That was really bad. And she had a lot to share with her, like the person who taught her Nushu and the other Nushu inheritors. And there was a beautiful moment where they wrote this response to a letter that a woman who wrote in Nushu some centuries ago about the state of women in China. And she was so worried about how things were because, you know, at that time, she didn't have any rights. She couldn't really go outside. She missed her girlhood days of being able to run because, you know, once your feet are bound, you can't run anymore unless you go through the process of unbinding, which was not really possible until more recent times. And even if it had been possible, I cannot imagine the pain because you have to just re-break the foot in the opposite direction to restore functionality. So you have to re-break it systematically over time, let it heal, break it some more until you get the full foot. I can't see that happening. So, but, you know, some women still feel similarly hindered in life. So, of course, their feet aren't bound. They can move. They can go. They can do as they please. But they still do feel similarly hindered by the pressure of society and the pressure of married life. And just like pressure, even the work pressure. But she was able to reply to this ancestor's letter and say, hey, things aren't perfect, but they're good in these ways right now. And she was able to outline it. And of course, the woman who originally wrote the letter, long since dead, very much dead. But I like to think that in some way that that familiar anxiety that we all have, if you're someone who thinks deep about the future, that we all have for our eventual successors, that she was soothed in some way to think of a future where things could be different. And maybe if the letter was burned, like a copy of the letter was burned and it went up, maybe she got to read the reply to the letter and think, wow, things are going to get better. And they did. And they did. I mean, she didn't get to experience them, but they did. Because when she was in that time, she could have never divorced her husband. He could have been beating her bad. A big common thread in some of the, you know, letters and things and some of the stories. What do you do if your husband beats you? What do you do? There's no reply for it, really. She's like, well, I mean, you know, do your best. That's really all you can do is your best. And even the idea of divorce, it was laughable. You couldn't divorce. Divorce to do what? To be married again? Where? Who's going to marry you again? And we have that like concern. I was like, oh, it's a divorcee. Who wants to marry them? But there's some people out there today, right now, ready to be stepfathers. They'll travel to be a stepfather. They do not care. They're like, you got kids? Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm going to be the father that stepped up, the man that stepped up. He's ready. But back then, it was like, ooh. It was really, really sort of a secondhand goods vibe. And it was just unthinkable. So now, you know, you can have a job. You can do stuff for yourself. You can have your own place and live by yourself. And you don't have to have servants to do things. You can pay someone to do things. The concept of takeout would have driven some of these women insane. What do you mean I can order like a snack to my house? And, you know, I just pay someone like a little bit of money and then that's it. Like, they don't have to live here. I don't have to provide for them. No, you paid them. You just provide for yourself. Yeah, you're good. It's like, oh my God, such relief. I know that was probably very heartwarming to them. You know, would the actual connection be back and forth? Beyond that, I'm really satisfied with what I did learn because I sat out thinking, okay, maybe I might learn how to write a few sentences. I didn't even try to do that because I ended up learning something more contextual because I did have some context for Nushu in the era of Snowflower and the Secret Fan, but like a little bit. And then as I read more and watched the movies more, I was really able to make sense of not only the cultural context of the time, which was just, we're at the very end of this dynasty and things are about to pop off. And also what the Cultural Revolution ended up doing later on. And how it translates to right now for women in China and how things were based on Confucianism and the topic of foot binding, because you almost can't talk about Nushu without mentioning foot binding. Cause I was like a lot of those stories were about foot binding. Like, you know, of course there are, how do we, you know, take care of home? What do we do? Da, da, da. But also what are we supposed to do about, you know, binding our children's feet? How are we supposed to work on that? How are we supposed to make sure it happens at the most auspicious time? That was a real major anxiety for them. And it's good to see that that is no longer the case. And to have to see all these different things layered on top of each other and why they matter and to have that gift of reflection on a time that isn't your own is so nice. Now, of course, there's a lot of context I'll be missing because I'm a Western person living in a Western country. I don't speak Chinese. I certainly don't speak the language of the Jiangyang section of the Hunan province, but I'm lucky enough to live on the planet Earth right now where people have worked hard to translate it into standard Chinese and then further into other languages so we can know the stories of some of our, not direct, but indirect foremothers and see the sacrifices they made to get us to here. I learned a lot doing this, too much, I fear, because when I had to go on a little break to learn about foot binding, that was, I put everything down for a couple of days. I didn't want to learn anything else for a while. That was pretty hard. So I can only imagine how bad it was to experience it. Like, you know, I really appreciated my feet and being able to take long steps and running and scurrying and doing other silly things that I get to do. So I have already picked out my October curriculum. I have been working on it already. This is just my reflection for you guys so that you guys can know what the curriculum was about. Because as I mentioned before, I hate just seeing the like. So this is really just for you guys. And for me, so I can remember that I did learn a lot and that it was fun. And I did it. Why? Because I had the spare time to do it. And I chose to do it instead of just scrolling on my phone. And it was great. I really enjoyed it. And when I checked my phone screen time for that week, it said, you've spent 5 hours less than usual on your phone. And I couldn't have been prouder. I mean, granted, I was still on screens, but you know, it was like reading and stuff. So I feel like that's fine. Anyway, I look forward to sharing next month's curriculum topic and discussing further with you. I will share all of my content in the bio, not the bio, in the description. And, you know, if you still want to join the reading challenge, we do still have the reading challenge going on. The link is in the bio. You click it, you fill out the form. I made a cute little reading tracker so you can look at it and experience the wonder of writing the name of a book or an article and then writing the name of the author and what you thought about it briefly, like literally good, bad, you know? So those are also there for you. And of course, if you made it this far, like, comment. If you haven't already subscribe. I'm going to do one of these every month so we can all stay on track on what I'm learning. And if you guys are still doing the curriculum trend, please, I want to know. Share it with me. What are you learning every month? Or are you doing like an over-arc learning situation? Like, what are we doing? Please, don't leave me out. And one last thing, I want to do a special shout out to JSTOR. I found a lot of good reading material for this curriculum on JSTOR. Your local library might provide some access to it. Otherwise, if you've been to college or know someone who's been to college, you might still have access to the archive from your college. I was very pleased to have JSTOR access from my college that I did my master's at and from the college I work at. So thank you very much for my 100 free articles a year, JSTOR. I look forward to continuing to do business with you. And these are not long articles. They're like, oh, I'm going to say 15 pages, but you don't have to read all 15 of them. You read the abstract and then decide if you want to work with it and then just read it. It's shorter than a book and you get a lot of information. So see how you feel. But ultimately, thanks so much for stopping by. See you next time.